Hey, welcome to Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters.
Judy Nathans.
And today is December 10th, 2019. Yes,
the 10th.
Right?
When was Pearl Harbor?
December 7th, 1941, a day that we're living in for me.
For some reason, I think it got overshadowed by something. I don't know what it was. Pensacola things.
That
was
awful.
I wonder if that was related to that.
Possibly.
I never thought
I get various feeds on Facebook and whatever, including one thing like war online, very historic things.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of Pearl Harbor related stuff available then. Yeah.
So when was the 7th? It was on the weekend?
Saturday, yeah.
Okay, because that happened Friday at a Navy base. I never got the connection.
Hmm. Yeah, well, could just be coincidence.
Saudi National. Gee, they're such good guys, though.
Right?
All right, won't say anymore.
Anyway, the speaking of historical, we primarily focus on all things Cambridge here.
Yeah.
I think it's...
Your buttons.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's probably worth mentioning.
Too bad we can't adjust the cameras enough to just zero in on impeach Nixon.
Yeah, so obviously they're doing the House of Representatives has
submitted a series of different meetings.
So they've submitted two counts or two articles of impeachment.
Basically, just two articles.
Which have to then go to the full House to actually vote on them.
Oh, it goes to the House first.
Well, because the thing is, you're not actually impeached until the vote. There's an impeachment vote.
So drafting the House of Representatives.
Right. So drafting the articles of impeachment is basically writing. Here's the bill.
Okay.
And now we have to vote on it. And I don't think they've done that.
But can the vote happen immediately, or does it have to get there's no appeal?
It could, right now they've gone through all these hearings.
Don't they want to do this all before Christmas?
Yeah, so all they have to do is they have to then, it is now presumably forwarded to the entire House of Representatives, and then they will schedule a vote, which will probably happen, I imagine, this week.
Yeah, but then it has to go to the Senate, and they could delay, because we know who's in charge there.
Well, the thing is, the impeachment takes place in the House. It's like an indictment, right?
Right. But all it is basically the trial
would have to be done in the Senate, with the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court of being technically.
But you're saying a trial if the Senate agrees to the terms.
This is one of the things that I'm a little perplexed about.
Okay.
Is that my understanding? Yeah. And again, I am not a constitutional scholar.
Yes.
But my understanding was the House impeaches, and then that obligates the Senate to actually carry out the trial. Now, some have suggested...
they have to vote on it to whether to carry it to a trial, I think.
Well, the thing is, they have to act on it. Now, what does act on it mean? So the thing is, they can't just ignore it.
No.
So they could...
They say, yes, we will have a trial.
Right, you could have a trial, and I always assume they simply had to.
But they vote on that.
Well, or else once the impeachment happens, my understanding was always that then they have to just schedule it. But perhaps that's not true. I've heard it said from, was it Lindsey Graham or one of the other senators that said, we can just have a motion to dismiss
off
the trial.
They could.
I don't know if that's true, but the thing is that
if
ever there was something that would have to go for a decision, an immediate decision from the Supreme Court to settle what the constitutional, the Constitution actually says, this would be it.
But wait a minute. All right, but let's go back to Clinton. Now, Clinton was impeached. It went to the Senate,
There
was a trial?
Yeah, I remember.
How long was
it was a Chief Justice.
Oh, and the only witness was Ken Starr. I think I heard that.
I don't remember if
that's
true.
Yeah, it wasn't
true
this full...
But they had the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court.
They did? Okay.
Who was sitting
there instead of Adam Schiff.
Who was quite old
and
at
Nadler.
The time.
Okay,
okay,
I get it. All right.
Yeah. So historically, it was Andrew Johnson who was impeached back in post-Lincoln.
Yes.
And that went to a trial, and the trial did not convict, so he finished his term.
Okay. So you think that it automatically has to go to a trial, and there may not be a conviction, where now we're questioning whether it even gets to a trial.
See, that's the thing I'm kind of confused about. Yeah.
With all the stuff that's been around in my listening, I don't know that either.
Right.
But I think I've heard that they can I don't know, you're using the word dismiss, but I think they can say, no, we're not going to act on this.
We're just not
going
to do it. But then if I was a member of the House of Representatives, I would then say, well, the Senate is not fulfilling its obligations under the Constitution, which would then force...
But we don't know that for sure.
No, but that's why we have the Supreme Court to decide questions of constitutionality.
Well,
So
as soon as we leave here, I'm going to go back home to CNN and listen to Jeffrey Tuber or somebody about this.
I'm sure anybody who's watching this program is a complete constitutional scholar. So, but the thing is, so with, what happened with Richard Nixon?
Yes,
that was there was a vote within the committee. Right. It was Judiciary Committee. I'm not actually sure which.
You're talking about on the House side.
In the House, and then which basically set the stage so that he would have been impeached. A few days, within a week.
Oh, right, it didn't even get
so
that far.
So then 2 or 3 days later, he then resigned the presidency, so it never actually
wouldn't
got
it be great, but you know Trump's not going to do that. He's too much of a narcissist. Right. He just says, maybe I didn't do anything wrong.
But yeah, the
it
thing,
was perfect.
You know, the thing that's kind of perplexing about this is that you know, this is sort of a, I mean, maybe it's a good thing that you impeach a person just to basically set the standard to say, these are things you shouldn't be doing as a president of the United States.
Act like king.
But I think everybody has understood from day one that with a Republican-dominated Senate, there was no way that there could ever be a conviction.
Right.
And apparently now it maybe there doesn't even have a trial. You know, so it's really almost like making a statement.
You know what everyone says that, you know, God forbid something happens to Ruth Bader Ginsburg in the next, that Mitch O'Connell, I mean, so close to an election, he's not going to let that bother him like he did with Merrick Garland, use that excuse that, oh, no, we can't because it's an election year. He'll say, of course I can do what I want. And the what is this about a filibuster? They vote, it used to be 60 votes to, and now
it's
only...
Well, they got rid of the filibuster rule. Yeah. That's a rule of the Senate. That's not a provision in the Constitution.
No, I know, but the Democrats wanted that, and now it's actually not good for them.
Well, you know, the thing is, it depends on whatever party you're
know.
In.
I know. I don't like either.
The minority party wants to keep the filibuster, and the majority party wants to eliminate it, right?
And then it's going to come back to
bite
you.
I think the Senate should have kept it throughout.
Exactly.
Personally,
it makes it more.
I think it's sort of a good idea to have a certain amount of stability in government by requiring super majority votes.
That's right.
To actually bring matters of great significance to an actual vote of the Senate. But that's me. I'm kind of part of the moderate wing.
I mean, there's some, me too.
The radicals of us amongst us would basically say, well, we've got 50.1% of the vote, therefore we should be able to do anything and everything we want.
Our elections the last two terms, I mean, for the last 10 years have been, well, not Obama's, but, you know, have been, what, 48 to 47 or something crazy?
Actually, since I'm, just for fun, I brought my Nixon Now button.
Yeah, what is
and
the,
then the impeach Nixon.
I don't know
Nixon.
What Nixon Now means.
Well, this is actually when Richard Nixon was running for president in 1968.
Why would
and in
you
1972, because I collected political buttons.
Oh,
I still have a lot of them.
You didn't.
No. I was never a supporter of them. But in fact, what I would do is working in Flushing, New York for various Democratic candidates, you'd walk in like a fool into into the committee to reelect the president's office and go, gee, we'd really like some Nixon buttons. We're going to go out there just so you could scoop up their buttons and take them away, right? Yeah,
that's
we were horrible.
Funny. Yeah.
But we
politics,
did it, right?
You did it.
But anyway, so I have a lot of these little souvenirs from those days.
68? Oh, were you like
13?
15?
I was 13.
I was
going
to say, you were really young.
I was doing political campaigns.
Because that was my first vote.
In 68,
68. Hubert Humphrey, right?
Hubert Humphrey after the assassination of Bobby Kennedy. So, one of the things that I'll just sort of mention about this, because it's interesting, it's like how these things come around again. I wore this impeach Nixon button every day for a long time.
And after that?
No. Long before there was any impeachment.
I just did it.
But by the time, and when he was reelected in 1972.
Wait a minute. You're saying this button was exist before he?
Oh, yeah. Long before.
Oh. It's just like what's happening at Trump almost.
Yeah, yeah. So, I was like, impeach the bastard, right?
Wow.
But the thing is by the time the proceedings, the Watergate hearings were happening, whatever.
Yeah.
I had decided, absolutely to become absolutely politically apathetic.
Why?
And I didn't, because I just got burned out on politics. I didn't have any faith
in it.
But why
did they want to impeach him from the get-go? I don't remember. Was it the Vietnam
War? It's not
War?
They. The thing is...
Who would make a button like that then?
My left-wing friends,
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the thing is I think there's never been a president for whom they didn't have an impeach so-and-so button.
Anyone out there knows if there was an impeach Obama...
I'm sure there was.
Or impeach Clinton, I think.
Oh, I'm sure there was. All right. Yeah. So anyway, so I wore it right to the point where I said, I'm not even going to bother, I'm not going to care. Wow. And then by the time 1974 rolled around, having hearings.
I
was just wandering the countryside.
Yeah.
And I was actually coming back from California in the back of a 1956 Dodge truck and with a camper shell.
Jeez.
We stopped off in a town called 84, Pennsylvania.
Oh, my gosh.
Because it was on Interstate 84, a truck stop. And there in the news rack was a newspaper that says Nixon to resign Friday.
Oh, my
And I looked at it, I said, what the? I had no idea.
That's
I mean,
really,
the guy who used to wear the impeach Nixon button, when I saw that, I said, I hadn't been following any news at all.
Yeah, that's
so
funny.
It was just shock.
Yeah.
It was funny, you know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, came back to New York, and then, you know, a few days later, he was gone. You know,
amazing. So he got out before he would have been voted out.
Before he would have been impeached.
Which you think, so was it a democratically controlled Senate? I forgot.
You know, actually, I don't even remember at this point.
Yeah.
But the thing is, so there's been an actual impeachment of Johnson. There was there was going to be an impeachment of Nixon, but he resigned so that he would not be impeached.
Right.
There was an impeachment of Clinton that went to trial, and he was not convicted, just like Johnson.
Mm.
And now this would be the third actual impeachment when they do take the vote, which presumably they'll do within the week or so. And then it will go to a trial at the Senate, and they're either going to conduct it or they're not going to conduct it, but he's not going to get convicted.
Right.
You know, over the last few weeks, I've heard some people talk about, well, maybe instead of impeaching, they should do a vote to censure him.
And isn't that what they did with Clinton?
They may have done that as well.
I think they didn't convict him, but they decided to censure him.
You know, and I thought, well, you know, listen, maybe for all intents and purposes, this vote to impeach is just essentially going to be the same as a vote to censure, because it's not going anywhere afterwards.
Right.
So it's basically to put a nice stain on the presidency.
I bet they won't even do that. I bet these Republicans, they see it, we're going to win again, you know, they don't care who he is.
You know, there is this really bizarre theory that goes around that somehow if you impeach him, somehow it's going to strengthen Trump's hand in the election. And I can't quite buy that. You know, I mean, and it depends on how you do it.
In his base, yes, they're rabid.
With the impeachment of Clinton, there was so much of a feeling that, well, maybe you're going after him because he had an affair. That's not fair.
Do you
responded.
MoveOn.org, I'm pretty sure, started because of the impeachment of Clinton.
You know, it's one of the great ironies is that MoveOn.org, which is now pretty much, you know, gung-ho, impeach, and do like very, very left-wing. That name comes exactly because you're the one who actually first alerted me to MoveOn.org.
Yeah, which I'm no longer that's a long story.
I still get them, But the thing is that it meant let's move on from all this impeachment stuff.
That's right.
Let's move on. Back to the affairs of the country.
Right.
And it's a certain kind of an irony that MoveOn.org is saying, we have to impeach.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, why not move on to the affairs of the country and move
Many Democrats, I was listening yesterday when they were, you know, said, look, we've done this, we've done that, we've tried to do this. I mean, a lot of stuff has been stymied in the Senate. Let's face it. Gun control, immigration, all these things, DACA.
That's true.
You know, it's not like the Democrats haven't tried to do something.
Yep.
They haven't been able to do anything, you know?
No, I think there's sort of a bad political culture in this country.
It's just such a horrible time in the sense that there's no working together.
Right. And there, you know, over the many, many years, I'm sure there were periods where, you know, partisanship consumed things, but for the most part, we've gone through
great
periods.
People have been able to work together.
For matters of great significance, like, you know, establishing Medicare, Voting Rights Act.
You look, there's always been able to pay people. I mean, Hillary Clinton was famous for actually able to deal with Republicans. Nancy Pelosi, I heard today. I mean, she's always been able to, you know, that's what it should be. We look back on history.
I know,
but
I think
now it's like anybody decent in the Republican Party has left. They will not run Jeff Flake, you know, I mean, decent. I mean, decent is
well, the thing is, we've run into a whole new political calculus.
Exactly.
It says if you do stand up as an independent and as a Republican or a Democrat, and you decide to just, you know, speak truthfully, if that goes against the political establishment,
which
the right wing Republicans, basically, if you try and if you were to say, well, I don't like Trump, and I'm going to, I think maybe I might actually agree with the impeachment.
Yeah.
Well, they will, quote, primary you.
Oh, my God. That's awful.
But the same thing happens on the left, too, if you weren't left enough.
Look what's happened with the whole Medicare for All. You know, it's just if you weren't like the AOC line, you know, with Bernie Sanders, and
in retrospect, I wish they had done Affordable Care Act in a different way, where they actually found something that could have been at least portrayed as bipartisan.
I mean, there are, yes, people that need insurance. We need to really deal with that. But people that have their own insurance through an employer may not be the best, but don't want to give it up. And if we go on that, forget it.
You know, and I don't know why we can't find compromises.
Lower Medicare to 55.
Yeah, on immigration reform.
That's crazy.
George Bush Jr. actually had, talked about, work permits. Honestly, what his proposal wasn't half bad, but the thing is that nobody wanted to allow the Republican to be able to take credit.
Really?
So the Democrats oppose, and vice versa.
Well, people also saw him as an illegitimate president, which I did too. I mean, that whole thing, it took,
But that kind of
500,000 vote difference.
But then September 11th happened, and then we sort of forgot about that.
And now trillions of money spent in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
And
so it's...
It's not a good place.
It's we have
since 2000, it's been not good.
I think I honestly feel like there've
been elections that have been
we are in political bad health at the national level.
We really are.
I think to some degree that actually descends down into political bad health at other levels. But
we even discussed that, in Cambridge, just the divisiveness and the name calling with the whole affordable housing thing or this or that and our revolution
sort of like we're going to get what we want, period, no matter what. I think finding compromise is still a good strategy for the long term. And at the national level,
moderation and
state
compromise,
level,
you
local
have to.
Level,
we just,
you know,
there are too many different.
The idealists, the ideologues, I think, are problematic. They kind of work against
on either side.
On either side,
I compare that to the fundamentalists of either religion.
Absolutely.
Although one would argue they define what the middle is.
You put a nice dark line on the edge. There's the right edge. There's the left edge. And it helps
and
to define
it's
it.
A it's a constant
true.
Like balance of what is Right. That's how I try to live with the balance. But
Same here.
I don't fly a lot. I've heard today, like one flight, you just use up all your carbon or whatever. And if you try to be like that, who's that young girl who's will only sail on things. She won't, fly. She won't take, it's like people that won't use a straw, won't use, get me started.
We are kind of in a weird period where there's a lot of theater that goes on.
My gosh.
Because
people have a microphone now. They have this big, loud social media.
I mean, when we were on Recycling Advisory Committee, I think we both tended to drift more toward the practical. But the thing is, there were the wild and crazies, too. I remember, I've probably maybe said it on this program before, I remember standing in at the recycling center and seeing somebody who, this is crazy, really, but somebody somebody showed up with some, cellophane wrapping or whatever, took a taxi to go to... down Hampshire Street to the recycling center.
You can't even recycle something.
I know it. But the thing is, this person was so zealous about needing to recycle everything.
I thought it was a tag with the metal in it that you were telling me that story.
I don't even remember at this point. But the point is,
minute.
It was something so minute that it was just ridiculous.
You're trying to do the right thing.
When I look at recycling, I think it's important to sort of think by the pound, not by the ounce. It's all about
yield. And you
look
at the life cycle of an item, a product.
Honestly, your righteousness in recycling is of no value.
Yeah.
It's the only thing that matters is the tonnage.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Although now recycling, I don't know, we can catch it later, but there's this video that was on the New York Times website called Recycling is Not What It's Cracked Up to Be.
Yeah.
A five-minute video. It's gotten 1,120 responses because it is does injustice to recycling, and then people are just shocked, and they're trying to.
Well, there's always.
It's horrible.
I remember from day one that when recycling was first sort of getting promoted, when we were establishing curbside recycling in Cambridge and elsewhere, in places like in New York, they were eager to push out the rumors about the landfilling of recyclable materials. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, there were some instances where it was, but it was basically landfilled for storage purposes. Or if the markets in certain products were just non-existent, you might have to do that.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. But the thing is there's always been naysayers who've done.
But the bottom line is we use too much stuff. And there is should be product responsibility and what packaging. You have to look at all of those things before you buy something and doing the right thing with it. But not all recycling is bad. You still should recycle. You just got to get a little more knowledge about it.
The other thing, too, that I think is really significant was that, you know, even though it was a great convenience for us to be able to ship materials to a place like China.
Oh, well, that's the big deal now. Yeah.
You know,
well, because there were all those empty containers coming back.
So we bring
all
in
that junk that we're buying.
We export our recyclables,
and that's no longer.
And that seemed like a cheap alternative. And so I can understand economically why, if you're in the recycling business, what you want to do, or if you
wanted to take it.
And they wanted
to take it. But now China has upped their economy, and they don't want our garbage.
But it's also classic economics at work, in the short term, that seems like an optimal solution. But the better optimal solution, in a way, would have been to not do that, so that you would have a feedstock build up, and people would say, we have to start refitting.
Now we're doing it, but a little late. We're opening. Our paper mill's closed.
Exactly. So what should have been happening was that there should have been revitalization of paper making.
We don't look ahead.
And our government isn't to whatever degree you can be helped by a government to spur certain industries. I don't know that we've necessarily been spurring all the right industries. I think we've definitely spurred things like solar energy firms and whatever. True. There's been a lot of incentives for building up those parts
of the economy.
And there
are a lot of things going on about using materials. There's a lot of good stuff going on, but really, basically, just be cognizant and educate yourself. I mean, in Cambridge, just go to the municipality site, see what you can recycle, what is getting done. It's not being thrown out. If the worst, it's being burned in an incinerator, which is waste of energy. And I know people say, oh, my, that's horrible. But you know what?
Better than nothing. Yeah.
So.
Right. But the thing is, I remember it was Steve Long, I think it was, who married Joanne Bassetta. He wrote his thesis early on, and I think he still works in state government, I think. But it was his thesis, originally master's thesis, I think it was really on developing markets for recyclables.
Right, you know, which is really the...
You know, and a lot of people like, I recycle. I've got a blue bin. I wear a three-arrow button or whatever.
Forget those arrows. That's been a big problem.
But, knock yourself out. That's great. But the thing is that if you're just collecting stuff, but there's no real good economically viable end markets for these things to go through.
Right.
You know, and there's been a real, in the quest for volume, there's actually been in some cases, degradations of these end markets. So if you say, we want to recycle all the plastic. Well, if you end up with some mixed product,
that's a problem.
Plastic mishmash.
You can't do it.
That you can't actually make good usable product out of.
Right.
Or in the great quest for compostable plasticware. Well, if that's all mixed in with
Do not buy that.
That's not buy that.
No, I'm sorry. Right. It's not. We can't put it in our curbside compost. So until just be sensible.
Right.
You know, wash a dish.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, really.
right.
Don't take out as much. Or if you do, there's our other ways to dispose of that.
But to whatever degree, there's always going to be some product going out in the blue bins.
Yeah.
Then I think it behooves us as a city, state, and country to be doing everything we can to make sure that there are good markets for all of that product. Honestly, let's see, you can even crank it all the way up. You know, even when they were tearing down the Orange Line, the steel was being exported, I think, to Japan so that their steel industry could recycle the steel from the old elevated Orange Line.
Hmm.
Right? And I'm thinking, well, isn't that crazy? Why aren't we revitalizing steel industries in this country?
I think it's happening here.
I think
there's that scrap metal is still a very desirable commodity here.
Yeah.
So,
We're not really, really clicking on all four or eight cylinders.
But I think we've got the ingenuity and we have the technical know-how, I think, to really solve a lot of that problem.
So let's move away from righteousness toward economics.
And look at what makes sense.
Yeah.
And sometimes you have to throw it out. Sometimes, you can't ban everything. Okay.
Right. Speaking of which, there's actually there are like so many hearings this week from there's four ordinance committee hearings, two wow. per day on
this
think,
week.
This week, I think
today's Tuesday. Is it
I think
already
it's
happened?
Two on Wednesday,
there's
two
something.
On Thursday.
There's something today, or did
yeah.
I miss?
Well, tonight there's like planning board. They're just doing like oh. it's like several so, things, but one is like multiple cannabis retail applications.
Gosh.
Oh,
that,
yeah, yeah.
Don't even get me started right. where that goes.
But then
you
on
know?
Wednesday, there is one having to do with banning new natural gas installations.
I think oh, in the, oh I listened to a afternoon. Webinar that was sponsored by Brookline, the Climate Action, whatever, about their moratorium.
Right.
And it was very helpful. And now I'm on some list, so I'm going to be
yeah.
in the know about
and
that.
And I think the, another ordinance committee meeting, I think tomorrow evening at 5:30.
I can't
is on
that.
The Harvard Square petition.
Oh, right. And I think these
the
are all televised.
Petition. They're all televised
good.
And recorded.
So I will catch
so
up to them.
Catch those. You know, and then there's two more, I think, on
they're trying
Thursday
to get a lot
well.
Done before. Cause
yeah,
they, there's only one more, technically one more meeting.
Right. I mean, the truth
city
is
council.
Is that
yeah.
the city council can meet as a body of the whole and act as the ordinance committee, even if they haven't appointed the committees yet. That's happened in the past.
Oh, right. That came up a lot. We'll talk
right.
about that in the next segment.
Yeah,
a lot of that
yeah.
came up in terms of
yeah. I mean, there all this transition from one council to
yeah.
the next is kind of, you know, for those of us who follow it kind of nerdily, it's
yeah.
kind of an interesting thing.
Yeah.
But, you know, the notion that somehow because if you haven't elected a mayor right away and the mayor appoints committees, that therefore the city council can't do anything.
It stops. Yeah.
That's just never been true.
Uh-huh.
But the thing is you just have to be creative on how you do
right.
it. For example, any four councilors, maybe it's not even that, can actually call a meeting of the council.
Hmm.
You don't even have to get the approval of a mayor.
But if it's an ordinance, you've got to have more than four people.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. So, you still have to be able to vote. You still need
right.
quorums and
right.
and what constitutes a legitimate
all right,
vote.
We'll
so,
get into more what happened last night.
Yeah. That's definitely because those,
we had to
those
get
issues
out all
definitely
that
came
impeachment
out.
Stuff.
Yes. Absolutely.
Recycling.
So, we're going to get local in a few minutes. So
okay.
See you then on Cambridge
all right.
Inside Out.
Bye.